We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of 3Maw.
Welcome into another edition of 3Maw. I am John Kurtz, joined by Derek Young from K-State Online, Cole Manbeck, former beat writer for the Manhattan Mercury. We are going to do a little bit of everything, talk some hoops, talk some football, continue our spring previews for football and get to linebackers. Unfortunately, it's a position of need for sure in the portal now with a little bit of news that we have on K-State linebacker Jake Clifton. But K-State is also in hot pursuit of plenty of transfers in the basketball transfer portal, and we're going to get you all up to date on what is happening there. Of course, our show brought to you by our friends at Holiday Distillery. Raise your glass of Ben Holiday Bottled in Bond Bourbon to another edition of 3Maw. If you are a whiskey, a bourbon lover out there, make sure that you try their Ben Holiday Bottled in Bond Bourbon. We all love it. Cole definitely loves it. Everybody we hear from loves it. So go ahead and give that a try. You can also check out their 360 Vodka as well. But Holiday Distillery, great K-State folks who support the pod, and we appreciate them, so please go support them. K-State had a visitor over the weekend in the basketball transfer portal. That would be Brendan Howson from Villanova, and this is the type of guy that I want, man. This is a pure shooter. This guy is a sniper. He is a hired gun out there to do one thing, and that is to shoot threes. He is a career 39.5% three-point shooter. He was 38% last year on 160 attempts. So you have to love that. And 160 of his 176 field goal attempts last year were from beyond the arc. So for the guy here that's been clamoring for shooting over and over again, I have to like this. Now, he's a guy who averaged 6 points a game overall, so it's not like he was out there filling it up a ton, but he's got a role. He's there to snipe threes. I saw the video on Twitter of him hitting like 45 in a row in a practice session the other day, so I'm certainly on board. What are you hearing, DY, about how the visit went?
I think it went really, really well. I mean, most visits do, so that's not necessarily earth-shattering news. I know that. But at the same time, everything that I've kind of heard emanate from this recruitment suggests that there's a lot of confidence that he'll eventually be playing for Kansas State in the 2024-2025 season. I know at one point Nebraska was involved. I think that, from talking to someone connected there, could dissipate some now that they landed Connor Asijan from Wisconsin. That's the impression that I get. And I think the Huskers were kind of under the impression, it sounds like, that the Housen recruitment was heavily trending towards Kansas State anyways. But I did learn this morning, you know, Texas A&M and Georgetown have tried to jump into the picture as well. But everything I hear screams K-State at this point. But I don't think it was done. I don't think it's a scenario where he committed during his visit. I think he's very much still available to an extent. But right now, I think the arrow points towards Kansas State.
I know the answer to this because I'm sure it's money, but what the hell is the appeal of Georgetown in the year of our Lord 2024? Can Georgetown just get the hell out of here?
Yeah, it's money's always the answer when it comes to them. They have it in spades. And I know that most people would say that Ed Cooley's one of the better coaches in college basketball, even though he hasn't made a whole lot of success, you know, in terms of NCAA tournaments and all that. But he was coaching probably perhaps the worst high major job or one of them in the country in Providence at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you guys hit it. John, did you know his nickname was the Amarillo Assassin coming out of high school?
I did not know that, but I like that.
John loves him even more now.
If you just Google search Amarillo Assassin, Brendan Howson's face comes up right away. A bunch of articles come up about him with that nickname. That's what he's been coined ever since he was in high school. He's from Amarillo, Texas, and also Villanova folks coined him that as well. Look, Kyle Neptune, the head coach of Villanova, was also at Neptune's been the head coach of Villanova the last 2 years. He left for a year to go to Fordham, but he'd been an assistant for Jay Wright at Nova from 2013 to 2021. Kyle Neptune, quote, said, "One of the best shooters we've ever had at Villanova." And so think about that, because he was with Jay Wright for 9 seasons. Before that, we know the dynamite shooters that Villanova has historically had in their program. Neptune also said in a story in the Amarillo Globe News where he was quoted, where he said, "When I saw him at the Nike camp in summer ball," back when he was recruiting him a few years ago, "I said, he's one of the best shooters I've ever seen," end quote. So this kid can really shoot it. John, you mentioned the making 45 consecutive threes. So it turned out the video was 2 minutes and 20 seconds that he posted on social media. It was posted in 2023. And it's 48 consecutive threes made by Howson in a drill that he's doing. It was 2 minutes, 20 seconds. So Twitter limits the videos to that length. He said later that he actually made 70 consecutive threes, but couldn't fit it all in the video that went on social, and made 97 of 100. So pretty incredible stuff. Electric shooter. And look, this is a kid that was a really good recruit actually coming out of high school before he went to Villanova. In the 2022 recruiting class, the On3 industry consensus rankings had him as the number 73 player in the country and the number 11 shooting guard. But On3 specifically, as a recruiting service on an individual level, ranked him as the number 3 shooting guard in the class, the number 4 player in Texas, and the number 41 player in the country. Rivals had him as the number 45 player in the country, the number 9 shooting guard as well. 1.37 points per possession when spotting up. He does that 48% of the time. That's in the 95th percentile of college basketball. So, you know, only 5% hit at a higher rate when spotting up and shooting. And 19 made threes from 25 feet or deeper. 63% effective field goal percentage this past season on catch and shoot opportunities in the 92nd percentile of college basketball. So, big time shooter. Would really love to land a guy like this. And he's 6'4". I mean, I think that's one thing that stands out. He's a little bit of a bigger guard, too. K-State's getting bigger at guard.
Yeah, I mean, I know the knock on him is perhaps, like, athleticism. Like, what kind of a defender would he be out there? But this is a role guy, right? And I would imagine that he's not coming in with the anticipation that it would be. Well, I don't know. I guess I don't know what those conversations would be like. But that's what we envision this as, right? Like, a guy who's going to come off and play. And what do you think, 15, 20 minutes off the bench and just snipe threes? That would be the idea here?
It's when it was at Villanova, so I guess that's all we have to really draw from.
Yeah, he played a little more than 17 minutes a game this last year at Villanova. I would envision his role probably being around 20 minutes per game at Kansas State, perhaps. Depends on who else they land, obviously, in the portal, so that could change, but you know, it comes down to a question, is he looking for a role where he's going to be a starter and elevate that, or is he comfortable being a guy that maybe does come off the bench and is a sixth or seventh man that plays 20, 21 minutes a game? I don't know entirely what the staff's plan would be for him right now, but they want him. So I want him. He had a 5-game stretch this year in February where he went 18 of 34 from three, which is 53% as well. So yeah, I'm excited about this dude, man. I think he'd be a really nice piece, a nice fit for this team.
Okay, this is the brainstorming process, right? I don't think any of these are great, but I just wanted to get the ball rolling on this. So we got the MHK Marksman, Flint Hills Fire Starter, Tang's tactical sniper. I'm just going to get the, that's just, we're starting the conversation there. I don't think any of those are great, but I'm just starting the conversation there.
The last two are bad, I'm just going to say.
Okay. I thought the fire starter was the best of the three. I don't, marksman's kind of lame. I don't know.
Well, we, you know, part of how we came up with the brand name of Three Maw for this show is we solicited people's feedback on Twitter back when we started this a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So why don't you guys come up with a nickname? Tweet us, tweet John, DY, and I some nickname opportunities that you can come up with should Brandon Housen commit to K-State, and we'll start coining him that in Kansas State. We don't want to be like Villanova. We'll come up with something new for Housen. So not Amarillo Assassin. We'll come up with something better.
Yeah, yeah. We need to upgrade that, you know? Okay, elsewhere in the transfer portal, I know we've all been big on Big Cliff. Cliff, DY, I feel like you've got this pronunciation down better than I do. Omori?
I think it's Omori.
Omori. Cliff Omori. From Rutgers, he took a visit to. Where did he take a visit to, guys? Who did I just crap all over? Where did Big Cliff go on a visit to?
Georgetown. Also, to be fair, known for producing, well, historically. Known.
Is it 1985? Like, yes, they produced Patrick Ewing for a time. And I guess Roy Hibbert, we can throw him in there. But it's not 2010 or 1985.
You're just going to forget Allen Iverson?
Well, he said big men.
I'm sorry. My bad. That's my fault, John.
Allen Iverson, I don't, like, what league would he have to be playing in to be considered? If he was playing in a third grade Diddy league, he would be a big man. But outside of that.
I'm sorry. I was trying to support you separately and was looking up Georgetown basketball record over the last decade just to
issue on that.
Yeah, so. So let me get that. So I missed DY say big men specifically. So I apologize.
Who was it? This is exactly what I've got something with, like, the DMV area apparently, because this is exactly like the Maryland football tangent that I went on this year.
Hey, you know what? It's time that we piss off, you know, another fan base. So all six Georgetown Hoya fans that exist in this world,
yeah,
we're gonna get them. You know,
Patrick Ewing and his family are going to be very upset at the Three Maw podcast.
Yeah. So let's just, because Ed Cooley really struggled this year. So Georgetown.
Ed Cooley was such a huge deal, right? Providence fans were so mad, and that was a big thing. And then he went in and sucked at Georgetown. You know, I mean, out here overpaying for Ish Masood, and then they were 9-23. They went 2-18 in the Big East.
Well, guess Georgetown's record in the Big East the last three seasons. Is a combined 4-55.
My God.
4-55. They went 9-23, as you mentioned, John, under Ed Cooley in his first year. Patrick Ewing's final 2 years, they went a combined 13-50. It's a program over the last three seasons that's went 22-73. I think I have that right. So, man.
And then, I mean, in 13 years at Providence, how many second weekends did Ed Cooley make?
I think Providence only under Cooley's won three NCAA tournament games, right, in his career. So
They made one.
Okay.
Where they promptly lost to Kansas, I believe, on Kansas's way to the national championship.
That's right. That was just a couple years ago. So, okay. Well, Georgetown really sucks. I don't get the draw there to Georgetown. So hopefully any kid considering Georgetown would laugh at that.
Look, Bama was, you know, we thought Cliff was probably Bama bound, and the early smoke was that was going to be his first visit. Go to Bama. I don't, like, Georgetown would just, like, dude, Georgetown, if you're going to go to Bama, like, I get it. They just made the Final Four. Nate Oates is a badass, and they've got a bunch of money and, you know, houses, whatever, that they can throw at you, too. I don't know. Georgetown would frustrate me, but this has been a kind of a perplexing recruitment for everybody, right, to try and figure out what Cliff is going to do.
Closer to home.
Yeah. I mean, yes, correct. I don't know. Any other updates or intel? I at this point, if you can't tell, like, we're not super optimistic about Cliff, but that's just reading the tea leaves basically here.
I don't know. It's been told to me that one's an uphill battle. I think obviously the confidence is there for Brendan Housen, and I still think there's a good amount of confidence on what's going to happen with Bob Miller as well, the transfer from Florida State. So they got two in the bag. I would call them, so to speak, the leaders in the clubhouse for both Housen and Bob Miller.
Some of that with Bob Miller is his NBA potential, right? Him weighing the option of trying to go to the NBA draft, which it deserves to be said, it's a pretty weak draft class this year. So if there is a time, that may make it more enticing to jump just because there would be less competition there. But, I mean, he's a guy that would be looking at being a second-round draft pick. So
that's all, you know, I understand.
Yeah. Hopefully K-State would win out in that scenario. And he's the – if you didn't listen to one of the earlier pods where we talked about him, kind of Naquan Tomlin-esque player there. So before we break, is there anything else? I guess, Cole, the last thing we could mention here is Felix Akpara from Ohio State is another big that is entering the portal. And this is just someone you really like. I know you were early on this crazy block rate that's at least in the neighborhood of what Cliff's is. So guy that could be some real rim protection there and maybe somebody that K-State would be interested in if Cliff doesn't work out.
Yeah, we don't know if K-State is interested in him, but he makes a lot of sense. You know, Yurik Malagi follows him on social. Texas offered him out of high school a few years ago. He was in the 2022 recruiting class. He was a top 75 recruit in the country, 6'11", 5", from Ohio State, averaged over 6 points and 6 rebounds this last year as a sophomore, had a block rate of 9.7%, which ranked 19th in the country. Clifford Amore's block rate led the country at 12.9%. Akpara was 2.4 block shots per game, tremendous length and athleticism. So he's a guy that when he popped in the portal yesterday, I was pretty excited about that opportunity. Coincidentally, he's also from Africa as well. He's from Nigeria originally. Clifford Amore, similar story, also from Nigeria. So he seems like a guy that would make sense for K-State at the five spot. We'll see if they go after him. You know, there's other guys out there. Nick Pringle of Alabama would be a fit as well. So different guys are chasing should they miss out on Amore, which we don't feel as optimistic on right now. But I would kind of call Akpara like somebody on our Discord at patreon.com/threemaw had called him a diet Cliff. And, you know, I think he has the potential by his senior year to be a Clifford Amore type.
Well, I do like that. And he has 2 years, correct?
That's
right. 2 years. 2 years would make a difference there too, that you could potentially be getting him for two instead of one. All right. Well, look, I'm wearing my home field apparel today. I don't know if anybody else is. I guess I'm just the one holding down the fort today for you guys. Home field. Oh boy. Are you watching this, Cole? What Derek is doing right now?
Hey, thanks for hiring Mark Pope and not launching the coaching cycle to another stratosphere. So. Out Kentucky, and Jerome Tang and Kansas State own Kentucky. So,
okay. Derek's a long time Mark Pope fan. So he is rocking his Kentucky blue home field apparel shirt today. It is a pretty cool looking shirt. I will give you that, and that's the point. Yeah, home field apparel's got the best looking stuff around. Cole, I still think, is deliberating whether or not he approves of this move from DUI. At least it's better than Texas A&M. The other day, but they've got you covered, whatever school it is that you want to find, 100 plus schools there. And obviously, if you want to hone in on the K-State gear, they have a ton of designs, 50 plus K-State designs. Just had a great drop here pretty recently. Make sure you go check out the shooting shirt, which looks amazing. Homefieldapparel.com, use promo code 3MAW23 for 15% off your first order. That's promo code 3MAW23 for 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. We're back in just a moment.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, we'll transition to a little football transfer portal before hitting a K-State linebackers preview as we continue our spring football previews here. But K-State had a couple of visitors over the weekend, one of them being offensive tackle Andrew Shombley from Arkansas. This is a recruitment that seems like it may drag on for a while, but K-State could use a little bit of tackle help. It would give them more flexibility with Kilty, who's a guy that could probably move inside. If you had another tackle there, I think is kind of the idea here. But D.Y., what are you hearing on how things went with Sean?
Haven't heard a ton. I assume it went really well. It was his first visit because he bumped his UCLA one that was supposed to be before going to Manhattan. He'll take that a couple weeks into May. Sounds like he's going to visit SMU in May, Maryland in May, Colorado next week for the spring game. So like you said, it's going to drag on. And for a guy that seems insistent on dragging this on, I don't know that having the first visit is a great sign to begin with. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Well, Colorado did, I will point out, get a high-profile commitment yesterday at offensive tackle, a transfer that they're taking in.
Peyton Kirkland from Texas committed to Colorado over the weekend, a transfer from the Longhorns. So not that that eliminates them, but if you're going to have this recruitment drag on for potentially upwards of another month, visit potentially 3 or 4 other schools, I don't know that I like where Kent State is positioned getting that first visit. I think their chance, and not to say that it can't still happen, would be for those visits, those trips not to happen, to be quite honest.
Yeah, you were hoping K-State could close it down this weekend, but he does have a lot of visits planned out, so we'll see how this plays out. We know K-State would love him. They're really high on him. 8 starts last year as a redshirt freshman at Arkansas. 6'6", over 300 pounds. Prototypical offensive tackle size. Played in every game for the Razorbacks and was a high-ranked recruit coming out of high school. Number 2 player in the state of Arkansas where he's from. Number 18 offensive tackle in the 247 sports rankings. 247 sports specifically actually had him as the number 204 player in the 2022 recruiting class overall. So a guy that would really be a fit for this team. Like you mentioned, D.Y., to slide Kilty down on the interior at guard, give you more depth there. And then if something did happen at tackle in a pinch, you could move Kilty out to either right or left tackle. You would be pretty deep at tackle at that point with John Pastore, Carver Willis, the potential for Kilty to slide out, and then also Shambly.
Well, they also had a linebacker in, Alec Marinko from New Mexico, who's the leading tackler for the Lobos, but part of the bad news here is that linebacker has become a pretty pressing need, at least in my opinion, with news that K-State is not going to have Jay Clifton back, who is opting to take a mission Mormon Mission, and you know, it's something we've heard about for a while. I think many were hoping that he would come back because he showed so much promise as a young linebacker at K-State. Now, he was also recovering from an injury too, but that certainly puts, I would think, much more emphasis on trying to hit up the transfer portal and find some extra linebacker help there, especially when you still have Asen Newsome coming off of a major knee injury last year too. So linebacker room, it definitely a bit concerning right now to me.
Yeah, I think I feel okay. Feel pretty good about the Will and the Sam spots, to be quite honest. I think they got enough there to be comfortable and to be confident. But the Mike linebacker is where you kind of start to wince a little bit and hesitate on what will happen there. And I've said that for a few months at this point, just because Jake Clifton was grappling with that decision to take a mission. And of course he's going to, so he's going to lead the team. Austin Romaine is probably next man up. And now, to be honest, there were some growing pains last year, certainly, and he went through, you know, that process, and it was probably pretty challenging for him. He had some good moments, but there were definitely some bad moments, and he ultimately, I think, was passed up by Poe Palmer because of it. But for a true freshman to be able to do what he did at the Mike linebacker position, you know, as a true freshman last year, I think it still shows strong potential in his future. I just don't know that I think you would like maybe another year for him to be the number two. So the way that this has to fall for this linebacker position to get where it needs to be, they absolutely, whatever one or two transfers they take at the spot, have to hit. One of them has to hit. And secondly, you need to get that next stage, that Austin Romaine, to take that next step in the stage of his development as well. Feel pretty comfortable. I think Romaine could probably do that. I don't have any qualms about him taking that next step and continuing to get better in a bit. He ends up a really good starting middle linebacker at some point for Kansas State. I just don't know if that's this year. He's probably more suited to be that number two middle linebacker and to be in the rotation, but maybe not take starter snaps. So they have to knock it out of the park here with the transfer. So if it's Marenko, he's got to be the real deal, and he's got to churn out for Kansas State because it's a really important spot on the field, obviously. And we'll see what happens. I don't think that one's done either. Obviously, he visited over the weekend as well. Alec Marenko, the leading tackle for New Mexico, each of the past two seasons. His accolades are strong. So if he's the guy, he's the guy, and he's got to be the guy for Kansas State. But it's obviously not a slam dunk that they land him over here. He's going to get a visit with him as well. And if I remember correctly, I think he's from that area. So Arizona is probably the school it's considered close to home that might be tough to beat. And obviously they're a pretty good program as it stands now as well. There's a few SEC and ACC programs kicking the tires on it too. So if Kansas State really thinks this guy can be the guy, then they have to lock it down.
Okay. The concern I have with Marenko is he's got quite a bit of an injury history on his profile as well. Coming out of New Mexico, he played banged up a lot. I think he had an ACL injury as well during his career. Look, K-State desperately needs a guy there. The other concern that I have, though, as well, is you just talked about how critical the middle linebacker is to the defense. DY, I mean, essentially the coordinator of the defense, and you're talking about potentially picking up a guy in late spring now at this point that could potentially be your number one middle linebacker trying to coordinate this defense. It wasn't here for spring ball, wasn't here learning the system. It's going to have to adapt and pick things up so incredibly quickly to make a meaningful impact in the fall. So, you know, at this point, I kind of assume Austin Romaine is going to be your starting middle linebacker if healthy. He's a guy that played banged up last year as well with a wrist injury.
Yeah.
He had a shoulder injury as well.
My argument would be, I don't think the middle linebacker technically has to be your, I mean, Austin Moore did it all last year after Daniel Green got hurt. Desmond Purdell could certainly do it. You got two linebackers that probably have over, 700-800 snaps in your career at this point. So I don't think that part of it scares me.
Okay. Well, I am concerned about that middle linebacker position, and I know it's something that's been on our radar a long time. Look, I think we need to say, like, even if Jake Clifton hadn't gone on this mission trip, we don't know how much of an impact he would have had this season coming off both the foot injury and then the torn ACL he suffered in November last year against Baylor. So, you know, he probably would have been a little slow out of the gate for K-State. They needed a middle linebacker probably regardless, so hopefully they can close on Marenko, and they may need another guy at linebacker. I don't know. I know we're going to talk about that right now.
Yeah, but what I would say is, far be it for me to tell them what they should be doing. And perhaps they tried hard work than it appeared that they did, and they just came up empty. But they should, I think, had a middle linebacker and a D tackle here for the spring, transfer wise.
Yeah, I mean, we've been maybe complaining is the wrong word, but sounding the alarm about the defensive tackle position for a while, and now Javon Banks is the one guy, right, that's entered the transfer portal for K-State. This
the one scholarship guy, although he was a DN in the spring, so he's not even a D tackle.
Yeah, a defensive lineman that did leave. He's played some D tackle during his time here, but yeah, you're thin there for sure. I guess I would say this at linebacker. I mean, yes, you definitely need transfers. It's definitely a pretty pressing issue right now. I'll raise this question. Like, this feels like if this were the secondary, I think we'd all be like, yeah, you know, they'll find a guy. Like, no problem. They've been able to plug and play guys in the secondary and send them to the NFL. Like, you know, we've seen that happen multiple years in a row. They are great at that. Can they do it at linebacker? Like, how confident are we about the evaluation at linebacker? Because I don't think you're going to be able to go just grab like a dude that is going to be an obvious dude and win a huge recruiting battle for it. If they do, that'd be great, but that's not quite the same MO with, you know, this football staff is just really good at evaluating. And I know that they have more NIL firepower behind them now, so hopefully that helps, but they're going to have to eval somebody. If they're not going to land Marenko, which I know Cole has mentioned, there are some doubts on him anyway. If they're not going to land him, they're going to have to find somebody, I would think, that's not like a top tier transfer option out there and make sure that the eval is good. So how much faith do you have in that happening?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of laid it out there. Here's what I will say. It kind of goes back to what Cole just mentioned, and it kind of jarred my memory. You said they seem to always figure it out in the secondary, and that's absolutely the true. But think about when they got those guys to the secondary. Think about when they got them, right? They got them in time for spring ball. Kobe Savage,
right.
In time for spring ball. Julius Prince, in time for spring ball. Jordan Riley, in time for spring ball. Josh Hayes, in time for spring ball. So they got all those guys. Russ East was there for spring ball. They got those guys. The one guy that wasn't, I think, might have been Drake Cheatham. I think they got him over the summer. Sincere Mason, although I don't know if he was ever turned into a starter anyway, got him over the summer. But, like, the bulk of those guys got him in for spring ball. They detected the need, so went out and got him at an early rate. So it was good evaluation. But it's always also they made up their mind and went and got somebody to help as soon as possible. And for middle linebacker and D-tackle, again, I think they would be in better shape. Now, maybe they dried and came up empty. Don't get me wrong. Part of it's coming up empty then. So it's either they didn't put enough emphasis on it or they came up empty. One of those is the problem. But I think they needed somebody in here for spring ball.
Defensive tackle depth and linebacker depth. When I look at this roster, it's the two biggest concerns I have for this football team right now.
My linebacker depth is more exclusive to just the middle part. Although I think Romaine and Palmer are fine depth if you have a starter, because Cam Salas is going to be a dude. Rex Van Wy is going to be a dude. Asa Newsom is going to be a dude. Those are good backups at the Mike and, or at the Will and Sam spots.
Okay, I forgot about Salas. I'll be candid there because I was looking at K-State's roster officially and they still have Salas listed as a safety, even though we know he's a linebacker now, and believe they have high hopes for him, a lengthy type recruit with a nice wingspan. You got Rex Van Wy as well. But I was listening out the names. Like, obviously you got Desmond Purnell and Austin Moore returning starters at linebacker, and then Austin Romaine. And then I was like, well, Bo Palmer, Rex Van Wy, Terry Kirksey, you know, some guys that haven't done a lot yet. I know they have a lot of hopes for Rex Van Wy. Asa Newsom, obviously a very promising future, but he's coming off an ACL injury suffered in September last year. Will he be ready to go at the start of the season and be like himself? A tremendous athlete, a tremendous future for him. Hopefully he is, but, you know, there's just some question marks I have because of that. You know, you got two proven guys and Moore and Purnell. Romaine is still young. And then, you know, the answers behind them, there's talent there, but they haven't played a lot. And so,
right. But
I think they need two.
That's what depth typically is, right? Guys that have talent, but haven't played a lot. I think that's the definition of depth anymore, because if it was a guy that was played a lot and you were going to tell me he's going to be a backup again, he'd be transferred to go somewhere to start.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's look, two linebackers would be great, but it's, yeah, you're missing like one guy that's like in the mold of Austin Moore, Desmond Purnell. Like, I feel like those are two very good building blocks to build around, by the way, at the linebacker spot, guys that have been around, played a lot of football and have certainly flashed. You know, Austin Moore has had periods a couple of years ago in the Big 12 championship season. He had a period where he was just on a tear and looked great. So they have those guys, but you would feel a lot better if you had one more of them this year to be in there and give you stability. There's potentially a high ceiling with a lot of those guys behind them, but
yeah,
who knows if you're there. And this is a year where, like, you know, you can't mess around with Avery Johnson, right? Like, the expectations are high. It's not a year where you could take some of those things not hitting and having a gaping hole in the middle of your defense. That's basically the idea here.
I'll put it this way. We're saying the defensive ends have great depth and basically relying on that for guys that haven't played a lot, right? Same thing. Jordan Allen hasn't played at all. Ryan Davis hasn't played at all. Chidi Obiezer has played very, very little. It's similar stuff there, right? It's guys that you think are going to be very, very good and haven't played a lot.
For whatever reason, the defensive in-depth seems a little bit sexier on paper than the linebacker depth does.
They were highly talented.
The difference? Yeah.
Well, Chidi looks like a monster, and Jordan Allen was a really high recruit. Ryan Davis, not a very high recruit, but someone I liked. Travis Bates came over as a transfer, but he was a redshirt freshman at Austin Peay. So at the FCS level, Cody Stufflebean, you know, Brendan Mott. I think I'm missing one more.
Well, Toby is somebody the guys have seen out there. And he's
Toby, a guy that has not played defensive end before,
but just gets out there and just runs people over and looks crazy athletic.
Saying is that's not totally different to the backups at linebacker. That's all I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think you feel good about your outside linebackers with Purnell and Moore. I mean, Austin Moore's a guy that started 27 games the last 2 years, had 87 tackles and second in the league for tackles for loss with 10 in the Big 12 championship season. Second team all Big 12 last year. Struggled a little bit down the stretch. I know he was disappointed that Iowa State game specifically missed some tackles, but he's a guy that's a proven veteran piece that really smart, has everything you want, and you know, you can count on him. And then Purnell flashed last year big time as a sophomore.
I think he's an all Big 12 player. I really do. I think Desmond Purnell is that good. I think Cam Salas is probably makes sense as a Sam behind him that I think is an ideal player for that spot. Austin Moore is your heady, solid player at the will that has a ton of experience that's going to make up for any limitations that he may have physically because of that experience. And then behind him, you'd probably start to work in Asa Newsome and Rex Van Wy. And I think Rex Van Wy is someone measurable traits-wise. He's got what it takes to be a good player at that spot, at least early on, and until, you know, Asa can really start to get the ball rolling in the right spot. I think Austin Romaine is fine. I just think you need him to be your number two rather than your number one at this point in his career. So that's where I still fall on the problem with this linebacker core, in my opinion, is you don't have a number one middle linebacker.
If Asa can be 100% himself at the start of the year, I mean, you're talking about two really long, tremendous pieces at linebacker that have bright futures, and Rex Van Wy, which, correct me if I'm wrong, D.Y., he still has 3 years of eligibility remaining, right? Because he came in, redshirted last year.
Yeah.
And he'd only played 1 year of JUCO ball, so he's young, and he's 6 foot. I think he actually made it out of 6'4". He's probably 6'3.5" or so, right around 6'4". And then Asa's 6'3", and was one of the highest ranked recruits that K-State's landed in a long time, that everybody was excited about, a huge recruiting win there. So Asa will be a sophomore, or a redshirt freshman, I'm sorry, and Rex Van Wy, two depth pieces that could be really good players in this league for a long time. And yeah, I mean, Purnell, fifth on the team last year with 52 tackles, forced three fumbles, had an interception, defended three passes. Say, honorable mention, all Big 12, but I like you. I think he could be a second team, all Big 12 type, even maybe first team this next year, because he transitioned from safety early on in his career down to the linebacker spot. And was it a good move as he came in from Hayden High School in Topeka? And I think he's got a really good 2 years ahead of him at Kansas State as he's a junior now, fourth year in the program.
Going back to the issue at middle linebacker, when I said, you know, I think the issue is kind of that they don't have a number one. Obviously, Jake Clifton could have been that and is not going to be. Austin Orman can be that, but probably still a year away from being that. You know, you kind of look at through the years what you did at that spot and try to detect a problem. And I hate calling guys out, so I don't mean to do this. But the real miss is that Terry Kirksey hasn't been able to do anything or really impact the depth chart.
Well, I'm gonna pin you down on this, DY, because I read your linebacker preview on K-State Online, which all of you should subscribe to KSO. But your bold prediction on the linebackers was that they would be better than last year. Now, that was, I believe, before we knew for sure about Jake Clifton, when that was still just up in the air and a possibility. So at this moment in time, now that we have finality on that, are you still feeling like this unit is going to be better than they were last year?
Probably about the same. Now, if Austin Romaine can really take a big step forward, then you're saying maybe then, right? Because sort of middle linebacker was a problem last year. Jay Clifton kind of made it less of a problem, but then he got hurt on two different occasions. So Romaine was kind of that guy, and Bo Ballmer was that guy. I mean, I guess if there's an argument to be made, if you get a better Austin Romaine and a better Bo Ballmer, which isn't unrealistic, then you kind of are better. We'll see. I'm imagining it being somewhat similar. I don't know how Cole would feel on it.
I think Bo Ballmer, correct me if I'm wrong, DY, was his first year last year coming off an ACL injury. So maybe he's a little bit more comfortable within himself, Kansas City guy, former walk-on to the program, and maybe he gets his footing under him a little bit more. You know, he made some big plays in that Kansas game when they inserted him in there in Lawrence, had a big pass deflection and made some key stops. So, you know, maybe he'll be in a little bit better position this year as well, coming another year removed from that knee injury. I mean, I'm trying to think, outside of Clifton, have they even lost, well, Daniel Green, but, you know, Daniel, unfortunately, was lost for most of last season after the Missouri game. Have they lost anybody else, like, from last year's linebacker room?
Besides Daniel Green, no. And then Jay Clifton. And then he added two true freshmen and Cam Salas. And I think Tyson Struber, which I'm not really expecting much there. Now I will say that they've, between Asa and Daniel Green and Jake Clifton and Bo Ballmer the year before, this is a room that's had a lot of bad luck when it comes to injuries the past 2 years. And that's part of the problem of what they're dealing with and how to navigate it. But it'll be interesting how it unwinds. The way to alleviate a lot of this was Terry Kirksey not being kind of what appears to be a very big recruiting miss at this point. Or I would say, you know, if it had Asa Newsom not got injured, maybe you could use the offseason to get him accustomed to middle linebacker, things like that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, DY, real quick. Sorry, John. Is there anybody else in the portal, DY, at the linebacker position that you think they're after outside of Marenko? Obviously, Jernigan from Cal visited this weekend, another linebacker recruit, but anybody else you like?
Yeah, I don't know if anything's going to happen there. I mean, I like the Elijah Herring kid out of Tennessee, but he's visiting Colorado. I don't know if Kansas State really moved the needle for him. It's quiet, I will say. I hope they didn't go into it putting all their eggs into the Marenko basket. I think that would have been foolish. I doubt they did. And we'll just hear what happens now after the fact.
Colorado also had Nakai Hill Green, another linebacker. I think he was on campus this weekend in Boulder too. And that's a guy, DY, that you thought they may have some interest in. Charlotte transfer, formerly started his career at Michigan. He's a guy I like, hoping they can get him to maybe visit.
What do you have more confidence in, Austin Romaine taking a major step forward or them landing an impact transfer that would make you feel better about the middle linebacker spot?
Feel better about it would be an impact transfer. What they can do and what I think is probably the more likely scenario for them is probably develop. I think they're better at developing Romaine than recruiting a really good linebacker.
Yeah, I would lean toward Romaine with another year in the program. You know, he started 5 games last year as a true freshman. He was the first linebacker in K-State since 1988 to start as a true freshman, most starts for him, and was also the last true freshman to start on defense for K-State since Duke Shelley in 2015. Had 5 starts. That's the most. I'm sorry, I should just clarify. 5 starts last year. That's the most starts since Duke Shelley in 2015 as a true freshman. So he was thrown into the fire, played 12 games, was one of the lower ranked recruits that I don't think people expected a lot from just last year alone coming out of Missouri. And so you know, he really had to pick things up in a hurry. And hopefully that year of experience followed by another off season in the program, familiarity, learning everything. He showed some flashes last year. Like, we saw some flashes. The potential is there. So I think another year.
You can't play that early without having some juice to you. I'll say that.
Well, and remember, you guys, we were at Big 12 Media Days all together. And what was the name? Like, the one of the things we talked about on the drive home from Dallas last year in July, man, the guy's name that kept getting brought up by everybody, all the players, when we asked him about somebody standing out who might have a bright future, Austin Romaine's name came out of everybody's mouth.
Austin Romaine and safety Jack Fabers, who's probably going to play a lot this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of guys who were just completely unheralded in that class, and we're all doing a little bit of extra research then on Romaine after the fact. You are correct. And hey, Duke Shelley, you mentioned last true freshman to play that much. He's still in the NFL. So
he's one of the best slot corners in the NFL.
Yeah. Pretty good NFL career for Duke Shelley. Things worked out well there. All right, it's going to wrap it up for us. Good old linebacker preview today as we continue moving through these spring football previews. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Thanks to our friends at Home Field Apparel. Get to homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code 3MAW23. And make sure to get your Ben Holiday bottled in bond bourbon from our friends at Holiday Distillery as well. For Nick Springer behind the scenes, Derek Young and Cole Manback, I am John Kurtz. Thanks for listening to another edition of 3MAW.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.